end now with what's happening in the world of tech. Bill Bennett's with me in the Auckland studio. Lovely to see you, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you remind us first, Five Eyes wants access to encrypted messages. New Zealand's minister in charge of spies, intelligence and the SIS and the GCSB, Andrew Little, reiterated this as well. When is it that governments want, with the proper court warrants, to be able to access encrypted messages on social media and others' sites?
Sorry, when?
In what circumstances? It's not whenever they want,
no,
right?
No, it's when they would. It's when. Well, let's just go back a step, because we have this kind of legislation already in our Telecommunications and Intercept Act, the TICSA Act, where governments can request that from companies in New Zealand anyway. And this is really about getting it from the big companies, the multinationals like the Googles and the Facebooks and so on, rather than our local ones. And they only really do that when you would in the circumstances where you would get a warrant, when you think a crime has been committed or something serious is going on, and you go along to a judge and get a warrant. So it's not a catch-all. It's not watching everyone all the time on these services. The problem they face is twofold. One is they have no jurisdiction over those companies, but it turns out that perhaps no one does, because the US is part of the Five Eyes and they're part of this statement too. And it turns out that the clout of the US, UK, Canada, Australia and New Zealand probably isn't quite enough to tip over the tech companies into doing what those governments want.
Increasingly everything is migrating into a more and more encrypted world. We know that we need that to protect certain things. However, it is also the way criminals want to operate, child sex abuse rings want to operate, and this is why governments want to be able to access.
Well, they say that, and terrorists, of course. Terrorism is the other one. Well, all those things, right, have been around for quite a while, and they've been using encryption for quite a while now. And for a long time, the governments wanted to have backdoors into encryption systems so that they could just go in, snoop around and find stuff without necessarily getting warrants and so on. What's happened, the mood's changed, the vibe's changed, and it's changed in a way that they now accept that encryption's here to stay and they're not going to be able to snoop on everything.
So this is recent. What the plea going out now is different.
Yeah, that's exactly because it's come as a plea. They're going, if you like, cap in hand to the companies. They're asking for a favour from these companies, whereas before it was, you will do this. So the mood's changed very much, and that's partly because the boot's on the other foot a bit now. Those tech companies are extraordinarily powerful. I mean, some of them are possibly bigger than New Zealand. And in order to get some extra momentum behind that, they've joined up with Japan and India. And India in particular is a very interesting case. I mean, apart from the fact that there's a billion people, potentially a billion Facebook consumers or Google consumers or whatever, and the sheer numbers involved, India has a track record in negotiating with tech companies to get its way. So in the past, it's gone to firms like BlackBerry and said, if you encrypt BlackBerry and you do things the BlackBerry way, you cannot come into India. You cannot have access to our billion potential consumers. So India is one of those places where they've been quite successful in dealing with these things.
So this is new. This is the Five Eyes partners going beyond Five Eyes and bringing in others outside. In what form? And what form has this request gone out anew?
It's really just a statement. They've made a request to the companies, and what they're asking for is they're asking for the tech companies to come back to them with some ideas about what they can do, what they can do to make it easier. And the mood in the tech companies has changed a bit too. I mean, they've become far more aware that there have been threats of regulation for all of them in other areas. I mean, certainly to do with politics and so on. So the relationship between them and the government has shifted as well, and they now need to behave better, and they know they need to behave better. So there's, so the politics, if you like, of the two blocks involved here has changed quite dramatically.
Interesting you mention India had the heft, had the sheer population size to say to BlackBerry, if you don't comply, you're not coming in. However, once the technology's in, It's a heck of a lot harder. It's like taxing, isn't it? It's a heck of a lot harder to say, if you don't, we're going to restrict your access to our population.
Yeah, I mean, India's probably the kind of country where they could and would switch it off. I'm not so sure that you could get away with that in the US or even in New Zealand, for that matter, switching something off, because people will start to become dependent on it and you're entering all kinds of liabilities and so on.
Yeah, well, and just the sheer public backlash.
Yeah, and a disruption as well.
Yeah.
And don't forget that a lot of the BlackBerry users back in the day when BlackBerry, my word, we're talking about BlackBerry, but BlackBerry's been dead for 10 years. But back when BlackBerry was a thing, it was extraordinarily popular with government workers and people in politics and government and so on. So
that's interesting that there's been this shift and there's been an acceptance that backdoor encryption's not the way to go. Were there really valid reasons? I remember Australia was endeavouring to do this, for example. Were there really valid reasons for not giving that kind of access for the big media companies?
Yeah, I mean, there's a very simple argument against it, and it goes like this. The moment that the back doors are open, the crooks are in.
Yep.
Right. And
there's been the odd corrupt public official.
And to understand exactly how that works, you only have to think of, the driver licensing number plate thing, where you can find someone's new girlfriend's, address from their number plate. It's very easy to get that information, even though it's strictly speaking, that's supposed to be secret. You can get that information, and the first corrupt police officer anywhere in the world who's got that access, it's all gone. It's over.
Well, you could make the same argument about the social media companies themselves, though. Can they access their own encryption? Do they have backdoors?
Well, that's a very interesting thing because, I mean, Apple, for example, doesn't. Apple's system is very much taken externally, and they say, and it's plausible that they can't tell what's going on in messages between Apple phones. They cannot get into that. It's not accessible to them. But with Facebook and Google, some of that stuff's happening in private on services that they run, where they do have some form of control. You've got to remember, right, that Google trawls through all this stuff looking for stuff they can sell advertising for. So, the moment that the Google computer goes back and tells the people in advertising sales, we've got some potential customers here for high explosives, an alarm bell should ring.
Do we know whether they're going to move on it, however, and come back with something that might suffice? It's cooperation we've seen over much, really, has it?
No, but do we think something's going to happen? Yes, I think something will happen, and I think it will happen for two reasons. One is because the sheer snowballing of getting India and Japan involved means that it's starting to be really big. I mean, between those nations, the Five Eyes nations and those two, you're talking about... And remember that, for example, parts of the world, including China, are not part of that Facebook, Google world. So you're pretty much talking about perhaps 30% of their potential customers worldwide being outside of their system. So these people do have a lot of clout. These governments do have a lot of clout. But the other thing is there's very much a realization in those big tech companies that they're going to have to start playing ball because those regulatory things are... trains are running down the tracks towards them quite fast.
Now, mobile phones, this is a really interesting thesis, that it's since the arrival of 3G and us accessing more and more on our phones that we have seen a rise in political scepticism, discontent, distrust. The link being we are just accessing the internet a heck of a lot more?
Yeah, it's partly that. I mean, we kind of all intuitively know this stuff, because we've been living through it ourselves for the last 15 years or so. But what happened in this case is some academics actually took a look at the link between the rising numbers of 3G mobiles or 3G or better mobile broadband in a country and the mood swing against incumbent governments and so on and towards populism, populist... political parties. And the first real big event that happened on the back of this was the Arab Spring. I mean, and it's been well documented that the Arab Spring was organised by people using online online technologies to get people out, to get crowds into squares and protests and so on. So that That's been long known about, but what hasn't been quite so well documented is the link between distrust. And it shoots up. It goes up an awful lot. And it's a kind of irony, right, that one of the areas of distrust with government is about 5G, which is the very technology which is delivering.
Look, we've never been failed to be hypocrites when we rail against the very technology we use, platforms we use. Yeah.
But it's just a remarkable.
So that would have been around 2011, 2012. When did we migrate into 3G? They sort of overlapped for a while, didn't
they? Yeah, it started a bit early. It started about 2007.
Right.
But it really took off in. There's a couple of other things about research. The first one is that it's. The effect is much, much more marked in countries where they don't have a free press. The less free the press is, the more marked the effect. So in places like Russia and the Arab countries and so on, the effect was huge. In Western countries where there is a free press, it's not been so marked. But in Western countries where there is a free press, it's been very marked in rural areas, and rural people have started to get angry and organised and so on. And we've not seen that so much here in New Zealand, but it has certainly happened in America, and part of the whole populist, political thing that's been going on in America has been on the back of those networks going into rural parts of the country.
Is it also a correlation, though, that the 3G technology has enabled a proliferation? I mean, we've had so many different social... We've had Twitter emerge in that time. Facebook was still a baby in 2005, wasn't it? So actually, there's a correlation with the technology enabling the social media giants and everything that has followed.
Yeah, it is. But the thing is I think the point the academics are making is that it wasn't so much that Facebook and Google were the spark that lit the flame. It was the technology, the hardware, the phones, and the networks.
All right, and finally, speaking of them, new iPhone models coming out. What are we up to now?
Oh, God, it's the 12, the iPhone 12. And it's the remarkable thing about the new iPhones is they're shipping them without power supplies and without headphones. So you go and buy a new iPhone and there's not a power supply unit in the box. There's not a headphone in the box. Apple says, and, it's a reasonable thing to say, that it's partly to do with reducing the carbon load, because they know that most homes have got dozens of power supplies and cables and headphones already there. And a lot of those things were just being, people were just taking the phones home and putting the power supply in the cupboard. And I don't know about your house, but I've got about 12 phone power supplies stuck in a cupboard somewhere. So
they make them all different sizes, though, which is irritating. Like they never keep a consistent size, and
they
get out of date.
Now.
That little skinny one?
Yeah, that's happened now. With the USB-C is the new the new standard, and the Apple phones ship with a USB-C cable, but not the power supply brick. So you can stick that in pretty much any power supply. It's not.
They do wear over time, especially if you're carrying them around in your handbag like I did. You end up with wires wearing and stuff.
Yeah,
but anyway,
wires.
You're not getting them with your new one.
No, the wire. Well, no, you get the wire. You just don't get the.
Brick. Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I kind of get that.
But the remarkable thing is when I read about Apple's plans, one of the most remarkable things about this is that a lot of these phones get shipped by air. So if you just reduce the weight of each box by, so many grams, which is what you're doing when you're not doing, it turns out that you're saving billions of tons of carbon because these things are, because Apple are shipping hundreds of millions of phones every year by air. So just shaving 20% of the weight off that box is a big saving.
What about the phones itself? Are we getting bigger screens, smaller screens, sleeker?
That's interesting because they've got four models. And as you expect, at the high-end models, there's super-duper cameras, yada, 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 all the stuff you expect from Apple, right? But they've got a new, cheaper model at the bottom end, and that's very much the trend this year. It's because people are not spending their money on phones so much. Because, mobility is not such a big thing worldwide as it was with lockdowns and so on. So the shift has gone from the high-end phones to the mid-price phones. I mean, there's nothing in the Apple lineup which is a low-end phone. But the mid-price ones, the ones that are about a grand, that's where the sweet spot is at the moment. And they've catered for it this time. And that hasn't happened in the last big reveals from Apple. I mean, generally they wheel out a mid-price model once every couple of years in the middle of the year. So they're responding to the pandemic.
Are we still reaching peak phone? Remember we said the laptops sort of started to fall out of date. I don't know where the iPads got to. Phones on the rise or levelling off?
No, phones down. Phones are down a lot this year, and Samsung is down probably 30% year on year with its phones. Laptops are up massively. And in fact, we've reached a point where there's a global shortage of laptops, particularly of low price.
That as a result of everyone suddenly needing to work from home?
Yeah. And it's interesting that they're picking laptops and not desktops as well. And the reason for that is because, you know, a desktop needs a desk.
You don't know where you're going to be one week or the next at the moment.
Well, yeah, but, you know, if you've got three kids at home and they're going to work on the kitchen table, they can all work with a laptop. But it's those low-priced laptops which pretty much around the world, they've just run out. There just are no more.
It's a pretty exceptional year on that front. And watches, there's no sign of us yet migrating from mobile phones to watches or wearables?
It's been a sort of slow, steady thing, but pretty much every watch is accompanied by a phone. So there's very, very few people who have a watch and not a phone.
Bill, it's always a pleasure. Thanks very much. Bill Bennett.